bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
And we're back. It is the Week 8 Monday Night Football edition of your Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online. Plenty of interesting results yesterday in the National Football League. And, of course, we'll have a full in-depth preview at the end of the podcast for Carolina playing host to the Indianapolis Colts. But before we delve into any of those results, we'll bring on the man, he always joins us on the Bet the Board podcast, Mr. Payne Insider. Payne, good weekend for you, my friend.
It was a pretty good weekend, not so much for a lot of the teams. The injury bug swept across the NFL. A lot of the guys were key cogs, so it will be interesting to see with the trade deadline tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern if it's more active than it usually is in most years. We'll get to a few of the teams that impressed and disappointed, but when you look at Greg Hardy basically abusing left tackles and the Browns putting everybody on the trade block, will be interesting to see if Seattle calls the Browns and ships Joe Thomas over there.
Yeah, and you talk about a lot of the injury players. Of course, there's many season-long fantasy guys, I'm sure, listening to this podcast each and every Monday and Thursday, which are going to have to reassess their lineups and try and find a handful of key contributors. So I encourage folks to follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman. And, of course, if you haven't already subscribed to the Bet the Board podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. And Payne, you mentioned the impressive and disappointing performances like we discussed first thing each and every Monday morning. We'll open up the floor and let you take it one way or the other, my friend.
Glass half full, I think it's the obvious choice, but it would need to be addressed, and we can start where Sunday Night Football concluded. That's with the Denver Broncos. Wow. Dominant performance by the defense. Secondary, white on rice all night. When you look at some of these numbers, Aaron Rodgers threw for 77 yards, 3.5 yards per attempt, and I know Adam Schefter tweeted this out, but it was that impressive. It needs to be talked about. Rodgers was pressured on 63% of his dropbacks, the most in 7 years. And when you talk about this defense, overall defensive efficiency by our metrics through 8 weeks of football, and we're talking about the best defense we've seen in 24 seasons. Better than Ray Lewis and Ed Reed's Ravens, better than the 2013 Seahawks defense. This is the best unit in all of football, period.
And I know we're going to talk about this not only in this podcast, but moving forward, of course, the big showdown that people are already trying to highlight on their calendar. Late November, when you could have a 10-0 New England team going into Denver to play a 10-0 Denver Broncos team. But big picture, you talk about what they've done. They outgained them 500 yards to 140. The offense actually looked like had a pulse. We've talked about it at great lengths. You needed to get the ground game going, take a little bit of pressure off Peyton Manning, open up play action. But is this more a byproduct of where Green Bay is at this point, or are we buying Denver having sorted out a lot of their issues? More importantly, are we going to get value going against this team? Because Peyton Manning is not going to throw for 340 yards each and every time he's out there. He did have 2 weeks to rest that tired arm and look like he took full advantage.
I think it's both. We talked about this on the Thursday podcast about the Packers defense being a little bit phony. They can't stop the run, and we saw that last night. Anderson and company got it going there. One thing that I looked at, obviously Peyton Manning had the bye week. The arm looked rested, but he's a cerebral quarterback. Kubiak might not be the best head coach, but he's a good offensive coach. And so they kind of got themselves together and figured this out a little bit. So this is the big question mark moving forward with Denver. It's Peyton Manning and the potential for a fatigued arm versus Peyton Manning getting a better grasp of this offense, a better grasp of the pistol. They continue to add elements in each and every week, expanding the offensive horizon. So it's going to be tough to see where they move forward offensively, because you will see the arm weakness progress week to week, but you will also see him get a better grasp of the offense. So it'll be interesting to see. But this defense, it's going to make up for a lot of deficiencies throughout the rest of the team. And as long as you have a defense, you're going to have home field. It's going to be a tough out.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about by the metrics that you guys use, 24 years, definitely impressive. And anyone who watched that football game last night could see that Aaron Rodgers, going through his progressions, never had his primary receiver available. And whether or not you want to say that that's impacted because of the absence of Jordy Nelson or what have you, Denver deserves full marks for their game plan and trying to neutralize Green Bay. When we talk about offensive efforts on the glass half full side, Payne, there were three quarterbacks who put up big numbers. Derek Carr, in my opinion, one of the more surprising efforts for Oakland, knowing that you saw money from the professionals coming in on the Jets. And, of course, the shootout that was down in the Superdome where Drew Brees and Eli Manning combined for 13 touchdown passes in the 52-49 final.
Yeah, Brees definitely had a resurrection of sorts. The offense looked good, got the ground game going a little bit, but this Giants defense, just an absolute mess. But you definitely have to give praise to Brees. The offense, he doesn't have the greatest weapons and targets, but he's making do with them, and all of a sudden they're starting to rally a little bit. And that division, not the best. We'll see how they can continue moving forward there. Manning kept pace, but his defense is just moving down our efficiency ranks each and every week. The defense was a sort of surprise early on, but the defense is killing them right now. David Carr, absolutely impressive performance. You can't knock him, especially when we talk about sharp guys being on the Jets this week.
Yeah, do we think when we look at the Saints, and I don't want to get too much into this, are they almost at the point where they're going to be a little bit overvalued moving forward, given some of these offensive performances and the large crooked numbers they're hanging on the scoreboard?
Yeah, I know we talked about this game, you know, 2 days ago, and we said if not for the last 2 weeks of performances, the Giants would have been about a 1.5-point favorite on the road against New Orleans. Clearly, they didn't start great, overcame a 14-point deficit at one point, but they had a 49-42 lead late in that game. And so you are going to see the market distorted a little bit when you talk about just guys looking at the final result and not necessarily what happened in that game.
And anyone who looks at the final sequence and goes through the box score, as you mentioned, the Giants up 49-42. New Orleans scores. The Giants go three plays, gain 5 yards, punt the ball after 31 seconds, and they allow Kai Forbath to come on for a game-winning field goal aided by a 15-yard face mask on the ensuing punt return. So as we've seen plenty of times this season with the Giants, can't manage the clock in the final seconds, and it costs them yet another important victory. Anybody else that really caught your eye over the weekend?
Caught my eye. I don't know. There wasn't a ton of impressive performances, and I guess I can be a little glib here. I think you definitely have to talk about the Jets and their disappointment. As good as David Carr played, this was just a weird, weird game overall. We talked on last Monday's podcast that although it would be a public side, the Jets, professionals dummied up this game to pick them, and they laid that price. It wouldn't last. It closed about 3.3 when you factor in your juice, and the Jets just never got off the bus, so to speak. And when you look at the standings right now and you take a gander across them, this was a crucial game to absolutely no show for. The Patriots have won the AFC East. It's already over with. You get Pittsburgh to lose, and the Raiders now, this was a key matchup to get that head-to-head lead in what will be the wild card, essentially. So this was a huge loss for the Jets, and when you look at the overall landscape, it looks like Geno Smith might need to take snaps under center the next few games. And that's trouble. This isn't a guy that I would trust cooking me ramen noodles.
Yeah, you can definitely see that effort was not there early. To Oakland's credit, they were able to capitalize on some of the momentum and put the Jets behind the eight ball. And you talk about a team who failed to impress, who we thought would perform a little bit better in that particular spot. The most interesting game, because you have such a dichotomy as far as performance and who you want to give credit to. If it's disappointing, if it's glass half full, Tampa, Atlanta. We saw the game go from 7, end up closing 8.5. We knew a lot of the sharp guys that we work with were taking the dog. They were even taking 7, and the number goes through that key touchdown price. You look at the final box score, Tampa Bay outgained 496-290 in that one, but they finished the contest plus 4 in turnovers. Trying to take that effort from both sides, you know, do we give Tampa credit for the win? Do we say that Atlanta is disappointed? I'm not even quite sure what the major takeaway should be from that NFC South clash.
Well, I think there's a couple nuggets. A, we've talked about this ad nauseum, that the Falcons aren't as good as their record. That's number one. Clearly, the box score a bit distorted, but I think after the Bucs lost and how they lost a week ago to the Redskins, you have a rookie quarterback on the road any road win is good. But to put this kind of in perspective, when you turn the ball over, you're just not going to win. The Falcons were -4. I looked at a database stat. Since 1978, teams that are -4 in turnovers have a straight-up record of 31-614. So uphill battle there after turning the ball over that much.
That's not very good.
No, not very good. Not very good at all.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, how poor it is and how difficult it can be to overcome that kind of turnover scenario. To Atlanta's credit, they did still send a game in overtime and had a chance. We'll see if this one costs them, pending Carolina's result against the Colts, that they end up 2 games back in the division. And offensive woes, there's no better place to start paying than with the Dallas Cowboys. 220 yards against Seattle. The defense rose to the occasion. You mentioned Greg Hardy putting pressure on Russell Wilson all day. But clearly, this is a Cowboys team that has not yet found their solution at quarterback, with Tony Romo still on the sidelines.
No, the quarterback situation is an absolute mess. Matt Castle is horrific. You can see it in his eyes. He wants nothing to do with passing this ball. Even the last stand there offensively, he just didn't want to let go of the football. But one thing that was interesting for me in this game was, obviously, Dallas, great defensive performance, kept him in the game. But I did like to see the offensive line finally be that offensive line that we thought they were coming into the season. They had a huge effort here. It's not going to sound great, but they ran for 129 yards, the Cowboys, 4.3 average. They were able to keep their defense off the field, keep the Seattle offense off the field, and that was crucial in this. So the pass game was horrible. Dez Bryant clearly not 100%. Matt Castle certainly not efficient. But the offense did enough to stay in this game. The offensive line, huge kudos to the Dallas Cowboys offensive line.
And you know, of course, before we close the book on overachievers and underachievers for NFL Week 8, we're going to make you relive in all of its glory the Thursday night effort from your beloved Dolphins.
Honeymoon phase is officially over, I would say there. Life is fun and easy when you're on the honeymoon. Let's see how Dan Campbell and the Dolphins function after that phase. You probably know more than I do, but suddenly the other half starts to annoy you. Dirty clothes on the floor, toothpaste splattered on the bathroom mirror, and that's basically what it's going to be. Life without Cam Wake, life without your starting right tackle, Juwan James. Devontae Parker snuck out of the locker room in a boot. Looks like the foot is injured again. And when you look at this Dolphins schedule, it is just brutal. At Buffalo, at Philly, the Cowboys in Week 11, who could have Romo back. They'll need that game like blood. At the Jets, Baltimore, a team that has had their number. They're just too physical for the Dolphins. The Giants will be in a playoff battle. And then you think you get an easy one with the Chargers, but you have to travel across the country. They'll have revenge on their mind after getting drubbed 37-0 last year. And then the last two games of the year, you face Andrew Luck and Tom Brady. So a daunting schedule for the Dolphins moving forward.
Yeah, things clearly not going to be getting a lot better. People wanted to talk about them as potentially being a playoff contender after beating up on the Texans and Titans. As you mentioned, the honeymoon phase officially over down in South Florida. Will be fascinating to see the Dolphins and exactly what kind of effort we get next weekend. So just to reset for those folks, and I'm not sure why you wouldn't be following them already, you can do so on Twitter, at Pain Insider. Follow me at Todd Furman. And, of course, subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, or visit us at toddstake.com. And Payne, we go through the look ahead lines all the time, and typically as we get deeper into the season, you don't see the same over adjustments on a lot of these numbers. Not many places currently on the board. You see some injuries, as you alluded to, early in the mix. But may as well start at the top with Oakland making a trip out to the Steel City to take on Pittsburgh, who will be without the services of Le'Veon Bell. D'Angelo Williams called back into the starting role. Numbers off the board at the Westgate headed into this week because we didn't know the status of Big Ben. You're looking at the Steelers, a 5-point favorite. Numbers ticked down a little bit from where it opened at 7. How do we even look at these two teams for this game, knowing what it means in the larger scheme, which is the AFC playoff picture?
5 of the 13 games currently off the board, so this little segment becomes much tougher. But we saw this open as high as Pittsburgh -7. Clearly, you know, probably not the best opener there when you factor in Le'Veon Bell. This will be interesting, though. This will have huge ramifications in the wild card picture here. D'Angelo Williams did fine the first 2 weeks filling in for Le'Veon Bell, so we'll see how significant that drop-off becomes. The question mark here is Pittsburgh's defense. The secondary looked pretty good. The secondary held their own against Cincinnati. So this will be interesting to see. I want to see where the market goes. God forbid this gets somewhere nuts in the 3.5 range. I would be a huge buyer in Pittsburgh here.
I think it's definitely an opportunity to short some of that Oakland Raiders stock if this team can continue to handle prosperity playing breakfast football coming across the country. And you mentioned the opener there. It almost felt like oddsmakers using a 7 thought Le'Veon Bell was going to somehow be out there with miraculous healing powers. Big Ben should only get better, as we've seen the stats indicate. Typically, the first game back for him from major injury, not his top performance, and with 3 interceptions. He was anything but electric under center for the Steelers. Rams-Vikings, current number here, you're looking at the Vikes, a 2.5 point favorite playing host to St. Louis, who's looked resurgent on offense, mainly behind the legs of Todd Gurley. Look at that number here, it was 3, so you've seen it kick below the key number of a field goal.
Yeah, the Vikings 5-2. Impressive. Looks like they're going to go over that win total that started as low as 6.5 on the year and closed as high as 8 some places. But a lot of the math guys hate the Vikings still. They have them power rated way down. Their efficiency ratings are 20 or lower from everyone that I've seen from my math guys. St. Louis coming on a little bit, the defense coming around. This will be an interesting game, but opened 3. Now you're looking at some 2.5 across the board. Pretty significant move even early in the week off that 3. We'll see where this one heads. Don't have a huge feel for it right now, but I can tell you just from a market perspective, a lot of guys are high on the Rams and not so much on Minnesota despite the 5-2 record.
I can read between the lines there and know where we're headed. I'm sure we'll look at this game in greater detail to see where the market has kind of responded. And, of course, it wouldn't be a Bet the Board podcast in some capacity if we didn't discuss the kryptonite known as the Philadelphia Eagles. Now a 3-point favorite, we'll call them 2.5. You do have to lay a price for their trip down to Dallas coming out of the bye week. Look ahead number here was -2. Can the Eagles get healthy and do so in a hurry? Because no one seems to want to win this NFC East right now.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting, week for Dallas. Do you even think about going in a different direction at quarterback? I think that has to be mulled. We've seen early money come in on Philadelphia. I would agree with that money off the bye week. The linebackers will be a little healthier this week as well for Philadelphia. And for me, I probably won't be involved in this game simply because I'm so loaded on the Eagles with some of their futures going over 9 wins, having plus $1.60 to win the division. So I think Philadelphia is going to be the side based on everything that I'm hearing early in the week. But for me, I don't think I'm going to be adding on.
That should be an interesting Sunday night game, hopefully, with two teams that are still trying to figure out their identity for very different reasons. So we'll see if the market does eventually get to that 3 flat line where I think this price will close. Doing movie review time. I know we're a little shorter, as we said, based on some of the look-ahead numbers with so many games off the board. Had a unique experience, though, full disclosure. Went to see The Martian last night. Was one of 3 people in the theater, but that wasn't the real fun part. The fact that we sat through an earthquake, a 4.1 magnitude, I was ready to give Ridley Scott full credit for special effects and everything else to really sell this movie, on one of the planets away from the sun.
I actually went to see this movie, and I thought it was okay. This isn't really my cup of tea, but I thought it was a good movie, definitely worth seeing. Jessica Chastain, probably the only redheaded chick in the world that I like. Not to give too much away, I probably would have killed myself once I ran out of ketchup. But that's just me. I put ketchup on everything, so those who see the movie will understand that little reference there. But good movie, worth the money, worth the time.
I don't think you would have even gotten to that point in the movie. There was no way you would have gone through what needed to be done. Your eating habits were off, don't offer a whole lot to be desired. So, maybe you would have been perfectly fine sustaining yourself on starches and all that, but, trying to grow your own vegetables in a self-contained community, I could see being a little dicey, Payne. You're not the kind of type that strikes me as one who wants to get his fingers dirty in the mud.
You have gone on record calling me dainty multiple times, so I will embrace that. And absolutely, I would not be touching much dirt and growing my own food.
You guys got to pick it up. I have the season over on the word dainty at 7.5, so we're about halfway home.
Okay.
We'll go the Al Michaels style. We'll just get it all out. If we're only at 5 going into week 17, we'll just use it 6 times. Like Al Michaels did a few weeks ago with Deflategate, making sure that his family members, I'm sure, could cash over 3.5 prop.
I actually got a little offended when Joe Philbin got canned and they kept using Dainty as a reference to describe him.
Well, I mean, Joe Philbin may be available, so I figured with your connections, we can get him on as a celebrity picker somewhere later in coming weeks to try to have him bring out an interesting helmet. Of course, we won't allow him to touch X's and O's, but then again, we probably shouldn't let Dan Campbell do that either. Monday Night Football, big game tonight for the Colts. We're still trying to figure things out. Of course, the news over the weekend, Andrew Luck's been playing with broken ribs since week three. Carolina remains the talk of the town, undefeated. You have seen some money coming on the dog. Right now, you're looking at Carolina paying a six-point favorite at BetOnline. Total on this one, 46. The Colts 8-1 straight up, 7-2 against the spread the last nine games, following a loss as a favorite. You can take the trends. You can do whatever you want. But where should we start looking at this particular handicap?
Not to make it too difficult, I don't know the end result, but I can tell you that the Colts are very real. That money is the money's very real. Who knows where this closes? Don't see a ton of other ways to look here. I think the under will probably get some love. The only question mark there for me would be the physicality that this Colts defense is going to have to face. Clearly not an overly dynamic offense with the Carolina Panthers, but when you talk about a team that has a good offensive line that can really run the ball, it might be tough for Indianapolis here, but your game plan is clearly going to be stack the box, make Cam beat you with his arm and his top weapon of Ted Ginn Jr.
Which should never be said. Your top weapon, Ted Ginn Jr. In any football context whatsoever, he should never be a top weapon.
No, absolutely not. The Colts offense probably gets a little healthier this week. We're talking about the broken ribs situation that was in week three, getting healthier by the day. So this will be interesting to see. That being said, not a ton on this game, X's and O's wise. The side is the Colts here. That's one of the bigger positions of the week from the professionals.
Hey, you definitely mentioned where this market's going. Sometimes you're not quite sure how the matchup's going to play out. You trust the cues that you're getting out there. And if you like Carolina, as we sit here and record this podcast in the early morning out on the West Coast around lunchtime for you folks still sitting at the office, you might want to wait a little bit, as Payne said. If you want Carolina, you get a better number much closer to kickoff. But I think it's Colts or nothing, although it's a little bit difficult at this point as the market sits at 6 with a total of 46. I know, Payne, we'll have much more hopefully on Thursday with the injury situations. But when you look, before we let our guys go and reconvene later in the week, who do you think becomes the most critical injury that we're going to see impacting their team and what the season outlook will be for their squad going forward?
Well, the Bears aren't very good, but I think losing Matt Forte is huge to that offense. It'll be interesting to see what Langford does moving forward. I know they're high on him. It'll also be interesting to see how significant that knee injury is for Forte. But obviously, Le'Veon Bell is a huge loss. We'll see what D'Angelo Williams can provide there. Was great in a short stint of the first 2 weeks. He was healthy. He was prepared mentally and physically. I know he'd lost 15 pounds coming into the season. But now that it's his job for the rest of the year and teams are going to fully game plan for him, it'll be interesting to see there. That's a big loss when you talk about losing your left tackle, losing Pouncey as well for what will be the remainder of the season after the infection. So that's obviously a clear loss with Le'Veon Bell. But Forte will be interesting in terms of the betting market because I like the Bears. I think they're a team that we could bet. We talked about that early in the season, so it'll be a little tougher for us to bet them without Forte.
Well, I just need to make sure Alshon and Jeffrey catches 20 balls instead of 10-plus, like the FB put forth against the Vikings. And Payne, much like we always think, is if our phone lines are being bugged, the first 5.5 starting to pop up on the Monday Night Football game between Carolina and Indianapolis. So short and sweet this Monday morning for Week 8, bet the board for Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. Follow me, at Todd Furman. SoundCloud, iTunes, subscribe to this lovely audio session each and every Monday and Thursday, or visit us at toddstake.com. Best of luck with your Monday Night Football selections between the Colts and Panthers. We'll be right back here, same place, same time, next Thursday. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.